largely female-dominated professions. Well, that's pretty interesting that the human language-heavy careers today are women-dominated. Mm. Mm. So it's an interesting theory or case study. When large language models make human dialogue the main criteria, does it just open the whole world for great communicators, often women, and great problem solvers?
Hi, 各位 Kara 的听众，大家好，欢迎来到 Leading Ladies 的单元。我是主持人 Tiffany， 也是 Kara 的创办人。在30分钟的节目中，透过我和各产业女性领导者的对话，了解目前各种趋势议题，如多元共融的领导力、组织或管理的规模化、新时代理财、永续经营、成长性思维等讨论，以及更具全球视野的产业观点，和我们一起打造你的影响力，成为你想象的领袖。嗨，各位 Kara 的听众，大家好，欢迎回到 Leading Ladies 的单元，我是主持人 Tiffany。 这个世代最红的两个字应该就是 AI 了，大家都很想知道所谓的人工智慧 AI 会怎么样影响我们的未来和工作的模式。但你知道吗？其实女性在这个 AI 发展的时代有非常难得的机会，我们的特质还有我们的一些特点反而是很能发挥的哟。我们今天邀请到 Micron Technology 美光科技的副总裁，负责他们 DRAM Product Engineering Group 的副总裁 Deborah Bell。 她在我们国际妇女节的论坛跟我们提到了一些关于 AI 发展的观察，因为这些所谓的大型语言模具的发展降低了许多过往可能需要很多年才能训练出来写程式等等这些门槛，让女性更能够参与跟 STEM 相关的工作。那如何用更人性的沟通方式去定义你需要解决的问题，去跟 AI 或者是大型模组去沟通，请他们做出很多的问答以及解决，这反而是比较善于沟通的女性，善于定义问题的女性的强项。所以我们的机会到底在哪里呢？那 Deborah 的故事又是什么呢？我们很开心今天邀请 Deborah。 Deborah joined Micron Technology in 2000 as a product engineer working on first generation DDR1. We will invite Deborah to explain what's DDR1 later. Deborah has since worked on various DDR, SDRAM and NAND products, and you were leading a lot of these projects together. Deborah has also been an active member in many engineering and manufacturing technical communities, such as Micron's prestigious technical leadership program, and has held a variety of management roles, including a 2-year assignment in Japan, and now on an assignment now in Taiwan. So I think Deborah's experience would be really interesting for our listeners, both in Japan and in Taiwan. So welcome, Deborah.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Thank you. It's great to see you again.
You as well. I'm inspired by you. Thank you for letting me be part of this. Your platforms that you create for us are just truly inspiring.
Thank you. Deborah, during our summit back in March, you did mention that first, I think it was so inspiring. You mentioned that nobody fails alone. And that was such a pivotal moment for a lot of the women leaders sitting in the crowd. You also mentioned about visibility, how that is important for women to establish our leadership roles. But also you mentioned about the future of AI, and which is, these are the three parts that we'll love to further elaborate and chat with you. But before we start, I would love to have you kind of explain this and try your best to explain to layperson about first, what's a DRAM? And that's what Micron has been working on and what you have been working on, right? And then second, what is DDR1?
I would love to, because I love technology.
Lay term.
I love to talk about technology. And when I think about DRAM, the most useful example I have is your cell phone. Mm-hmm. So your cell phone, you know, if it's completely dead and you turn it back on again, it takes a long time to power up, right? And that's because the DRAM, when it's got no power left, has no data left. Mm-hmm. However, as long as your cell phone isn't completely dead, it's just in sleep mode, you know, you can pick it up and it's on in an instant. Mm-hmm. That's DRAM. DRAM is very fast memory. It's called DRAM. The D is dynamic, meaning it goes away when the power goes away, But as long as power is on, it is super fast, and that's what makes our cell phones actually accessible. It also powers many other types of technology that we get used to on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. And then what is the DDR1?
So the DDR is how we talk to the DRAM. Mm-hmm. DDR stands for double data rate. What that means, memory is timed by a clock, mm-hmm. and a clock is a square wave. And it used to be only one edge, a rising edge perhaps, would be where the data mm-hmm. comes in or out. Mm-hmm. And now double data rate is just what it sounds like. Now both of the edges have data coming in and out. All it is just how you talk mm-hmm. to the DRAM and how it talks to the outside world.
So it makes it faster.
Much faster.
And possibly more stable as well?
More efficient. Efficient. For sure.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And please introduce yourself a little bit, because I know you were in engineering and you have been in with Micron for over 20 years.
Yes.
That's so crazy. How did this all started? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. Yes. So I have been at Micron for almost 24 years. When I started, Micron recruited at the university I went to. Mm-hmm. I studied electrical engineering, and so Micron was my first job. And I remember thinking, my mentor had been there 5 years, and I thought, who wants to work on memory for 5 years?
Yeah.
I thought for sure I would be gone in 3 to 5 years. But because it is leading technology, and it really does power all sorts of different mm-hmm. electronics, I stayed. And as a result, I've had the opportunity to try a number of different activities at Micron. As you mentioned, I got to live in Japan mm-hmm. and in Taiwan, and I started as an individual contributing product engineer mm-hmm. to now being the vice president of worldwide product mm-hmm. engineering. And along that path, I'm also passionate about creativity and innovation. And so I've had a great opportunity to innovate, and I have approaching 100 U.S. patents now as well.
Wow.
All thanks to the opportunities that I get being in a tech world.
And that's been 20 years of this journey in STEM, right?
Yes.
What have you noticed that's different 20 years ago and now?
It's drastically different. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, if we think about not just the technology, but when we talk about DEI, truly, 20 years ago, if you'd said the letters DEI, they would be meaningless letters. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even a conversation. Mm-hmm. We had no such thing as an employee resource group. And now I see it's part of our culture. It's something that from the top level leadership, we have DEI offices mm-hmm. and we have energy regularly put into creating a more inclusive space, not just because it's the right thing to do,
yeah.
but because it makes us better.
Yes.
Huge progression.
And you're also quite open about your own orientation,
yes.
right? LGBTQ. And I think that must have been hard in the very beginning just to get to know yourself and whether it's acceptable at workplace. And how has that also shift?
Hugely mm-hmm. also. For sure, when I started, I wasn't out to anybody, though I knew in college, mm-hmm. I understood that I identified as a lesbian, but I was not out at all mm-hmm. Until about 10 years into my career. And then it really was a journey. I started to tell, you know, close friends mm-hmm. and then kind of the last group to know would be the workplace, because mm-hmm. I was so used to never bringing my personal life
right.
into work. So for sure a journey. And even within work, early on, it was close colleagues and folks would know. But even then, I wouldn't have a rainbow flag or
right.
I wouldn't show a picture of right. of my family.
Right.
And now I'm comfortable and happy to speak about it very publicly mm-hmm. because I'm proud of who I am. And also, I think it's important not to hide if not to hide.
Yeah. And I think that also comes with community support and how the society has changed that, how they view everyone's individuality. You also mentioned that because over this 20 years, you slowly progresses into leadership roles.
Yes.
I wouldn't describe you as someone super extroverted.
Nope.
Also, you're in engineering. But I think over the years, you've also mentioned that you realize the importance of women having visibility. Can you share with us a little bit more about how you have that realization and how you were able to work towards that? Because realizing is one thing, right? Able to work toward that is another.
I love this question because you're so right. One of my early mistakes or misconceptions was that visibility didn't matter.
It was merit only.
Yes. Yes. And I'm an engineer, a database. That's what made sense in my brain. Mm-hmm. And I started to understand better, but I have a situation that really impacted me to where I was like, whoa, visibility matters to me. Mm-hmm. And then I'll share some other examples that really emphasize that why visibility matters. So as you mentioned, I am openly lesbian. And around the beginning of COVID, in that journey of coming out, my colleagues all knew, but I was still in the phase where I wasn't necessarily super public about mm-hmm. it, but I knew, my leadership mm-hmm. knew, my team members knew. And then COVID hit, we all went home, and Zoom backgrounds got to be super popular, right? And then we got to Pride Month, June 2020, so shortly into COVID, and I dialed into my leader's staff meeting. Mm-hmm. And I must have been one of the last people to dial in because all of a sudden it was just a wall of rainbows. Everybody had chosen, I think everybody, if not everybody, certainly my leader. Uh-huh. And he's an older white guy yeah. from the South, fairly conservative. A bunch of my colleagues are as well. They all had chosen mm-hmm. rainbow flags. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily for me, but right. I was like, whoa, it doesn't...
That's an encouragement, right? It's a sign of encouragement. Yeah.
And support. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think I needed it. Like, yeah. I felt like if anybody had asked me, I knew they supported me, but still it was mm-hmm. like an emotional moment. Mm-hmm. And then I started to realize if I would, in a lot of cases, not even be brave, I wore a Hispanic ERG shirt. And then I was on a call with one of my colleagues who I've worked with for many years. Yeah. He's from Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. At the end of that call, he's like, hey, just so you know, I love that you're wearing that shirt. That makes me feel appreciated. Mm-hmm. Like, so it matters. And then when I came to Taiwan, I had the chance to kick off the first event of the Taiwan Micron mm-hmm. Pride ERG. Mm-hmm. It was the first time I spoke publicly about being a member of the community. So I was, you know, pretty nervous, but realizing that visibility matters and wanting to be part of that positive impact. Mm-hmm. So I spoke about it. I spoke about it outside of Micron as well. And the responses were overwhelming, not just from allies, mm-hmm. many, many allies mm-hmm. would talk about how their siblings appreciated it, but then other members of the community, some of whom weren't out at all, some of whom felt not safe in their current work environments and felt like this was a clear demonstration that Micron or at least other places might be safe places.
Right.
I have a wrong misconception at the beginning that visibility didn't matter. And mm-hmm. I've had many, many examples since then. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of that you asked, how do I like lean into becoming more visible? It's that positive reinforcement right. of understanding mm-hmm. that people care.
You cannot be what you can't see. So being able to be in your position now that you are in a much senior position, able to show visibility for others, mm-hmm. I think that's quite important. That's such a message that you're sending out for younger generation or younger leaders as well.
Thank you. Very helpful to have a supportive community right. around me. Like the community that you built, like right. the community that my boss with the mm-hmm. Pride Rainbows built, having mm-hmm. that gives a safe space to continue to be visible.
Definitely. So visibility in terms of what you represent, the values, I think that's one part of how it matters. The other kind of aspect I wanted to also ask you is about your leadership, how you were able to notice that being a leader, you might need to speak up for yourself, voice for others, or even just to scale your influence. And I think that also progresses through time and you kind of built that ability. Any examples or any learnings that you've had over the past 20 years? A lot.
Many, yes. Yes, many learning opportunities. And early, when I was starting to become a technical leader, mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily have a big team. In some cases, I didn't have much of a team at all. Mm-hmm. But I learned a really effective trick for me. I would have an idea about what I wanted to get done, but I don't have any direct
resource.
Reports. Mm. Yeah. But I have maybe some respect and some influence. So what I would do is I would basically just like pull together a group and say, hey, this is what I'm thinking we should do. None of you work for me or maybe the resources I need. I'm talking to their leaders, but I very genuinely ask, okay, I'm looking for feedback. Mm-hmm. I shoot holes in it. It might be a bad idea, but I realized communicating what I want to do very openly, humbly, so that they can actually weigh in and change the direction. But once they're there and sitting in the room and we're agreeing, I got very lucky to have buy-in. Like that one step of nobody was asking me necessarily to do these things. I was just like, you know what? It's going to be too hard to try and beg people to work on this. Let's just put a vision together and communicate it. Mm-hmm. And then I had to be humble to change it. If people came in and were like, that's a bad idea,
I had to.
It really was a conversation. But because then people do buy in. And I found that ability to communicate and to be transparent and to step out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I love being in a dark little corner coding all that. not coding, but designing circuits. I love that.
Yeah.
But stepping out of that to scale up, to have a voice and to get buy-in taught me that the value of that transparency, which then I could use as I did start to have resources in my own team. I was like, okay, well, I don't want to just be the boss. Right. Let's have the same conversations. Mm-hmm.
So you also develop your team to be able to kind of pull that resource together or just to show a vision to kind of influence everybody, to rally them together towards the same goal.
That's exactly the hope, the intention.
The hope, right? Yep. So you've also mentioned that just from the brief understanding and interaction I have with you, I would imagine that although you are very data-driven as an engineer, and like you say, you love, you know, working on these circuits, designing them, you're a creator at heart. But also I felt like you are quite empathetic and you're quite like open to feel different types of emotions and the world, and which is quite rare for stereotypically for engineering background. And I think that's maybe why it's important to ask you about there's this gap between how STEM talents and non-STEM talents. You mentioned that the revolution of AI is going to shift the way we work. So maybe I'll ask you this first. Do you think it will take our job? And I think that's the million-dollar question that people's been asking the past 3 years, right?
Thank you for asking, because you're right. It comes up a lot. And when I think about, will AI take our job or will any new technology take our jobs, I think back in time. So it turns out we all need to eat. Humans need to eat. And so not that long ago, a century or two, humans spent a huge amount of our bandwidth feeding ourselves. We'll just call it farming, whatever versions of eating we needed. And then we had advancements, STEM-based advancements that created efficiencies so that we didn't have to spend as much time farming. Mm-hmm. And so then, okay, great, we have this new technology. What happened between then and now? Some of the things that happened are humans now live longer. Mm-hmm. Humans now spend less time working. We spend some of that efficiency on our own leisure time. Mm-hmm. And the number of jobs and the types of jobs are drastically more and more diverse than a couple hundred years ago when we had to focus on farming.
Right.
And you can think of the same thing with just about any major advancement, horses to cars. I mean, there are a lot of scenarios where one type of job changed. It's still necessary. There are still cases, but it freed us up and then opened up the doors to far more opportunity and jobs. And that's what I really think will happen with AI as well. Our jobs will shift. Some of our jobs will shift completely, but it will free us to then spend time on something that we might actually care about more than our standard job today.
It boosts our productivity, which frees up our capacity and bandwidth to do other creative jobs.
You say that so much better than me.
I'm trying to summarize it in a layperson term, but I think that's beautiful. And that might also comes to my next question, is that I was really curious about what you said back at the summit about how AI, and also our mighty Jensen Huang also mentioned that too. You know, this whole revolution, this whole effort in developing AI is to really create more possibilities for people to co-work with coding and make it less such a hurdle for everyone to understand, right? So no more long years of training, maybe. But there's still this gap between when you mentioned that now in the future, it's about how you're able to use as human language as possible to give prompts, to give orders, to work with it. Can you elaborate more about this concept?
Yes, absolutely. So when we think about STEM, classic STEM, there's, for whatever reason, there's a barrier to entry for women. Mm-hmm. And it's been consistent for many years. We're making progress, but it's still difficult.
Yes.
And then we have this AI, which is new for all of us. In a lot of cases, we haven't defined that AI is a boy's job or a girl's job. It's new. We're still learning it. And so when we think about how we interact with AI, as we discussed, so there's this barrier to entry for STEM for women that AI lowers drastically. Mm-hmm. And a very specific case that I saw is I really am not a programmer. This is not my mm-hmm. expertise at all. But I programmed in Python recently mm-hmm. without ever opening a Python book. I just had a conversation with a large language model uh-huh. and said, hey, can you create this result in Python? And it did it.
Wow.
And guess what? It turns out I can now code in any language that a large language model knows. And I can ask it, what's the right language to code for this? What do you recommend? We can have a whole chat about it. So for me, I suddenly can code. I'm not going to be the best coder,
right.
but that barrier just went to simply having a problem, defining what success looks like, and then having a conversation.
Data driven, right?
Yes. Yes. Human resources mm-hmm. folks that mm-hmm. interact with humans, mm-hmm. that's their role. Largely female dominated
right.
professions. Well, that's pretty interesting that the human language heavy careers today mm-hmm. are women dominated. Mm. So it's an interesting theory or case study. When large language models make human dialogue the main criteria, does it just open the whole world for great communicators, often women, and great problem solvers, often women, to use this large language tool or this AI tool to solve problems that today you have to have this in-depth knowledge to be able to solve?
I think you mentioned a very critical point to be able to adapt that whole human language is first, you have to be able to identify the problem, right? And then you have to define what success is. And I think that's a bit difficult right now to think of. Are there ways that we can kind of develop our sense of that? Because even you didn't, for example, what you mentioned earlier, even you weren't a coder, you were able to know that, okay, you want to do it in Python, mm-hmm. right? And that requires certain knowledge. It's much lower barrier than knowing how to do it yourself, but at least you have to know what are the results you want, what are the tools you want an AI to write in, and how do you define that problem? So I think that's really, it comes down to those type of core skills. How do we develop that?
So this is something, again, where I think women have a great opportunity because we are quite good at solving all kinds of
yes,
unexpected
always.
Problems.
Yes.
We sort of naturally learn what success sort of looks like. But a benefit, I really mean it when I say I have conversations with the AI, because I'll say, okay, here's my problem, and here's what I really care about. Or I'll even say, I have this problem I'm thinking about. Please ask me some questions until you get a couple of recommendations, and tell me why you're recommending these. Knowing what the problem is, knowing what you care about, you can ask the large language model to help you to define what you care about, and then it can help you with that conversation to create the solution.
So it's really also about the ability to be precise in terms of the questions that you ask the large language model, right? Or the prompts that you wanted to give. It has to be very complete, very precise to enable them to generate better answers, or even just to have a conversation with you to kind of funnel or refine the results that you want.
Yes. Yes. And I actually took a prompt engineering class for this reason.
Oh,
and
wow.
The cool thing that it taught me was it really is oftentimes the class acknowledged that we aren't that precise. We kind of mm-hmm. sometimes don't even know exactly what we want. And I'll give an example I had recently. There was this type of technology I wanted to learn more about. And this wasn't something that Micron does, so I couldn't just go to a local subject matter expert. I could have Googled it and maybe found some professional papers, but I decided to give it a try and I picked a large language model. I ended up having a half day conversation with this large language model, like, hey, if I wanted to design this thing, tell me the steps. And also I'm an engineer, but talk to me like I don't know these things. So
oh,
I could,
wow. it,
but this is what the prompt engineering class was
right.
teaching, not how to be exact,
right.
but rather
refine it.
Yes. And have like a chat, like, mm-hmm. okay, I didn't understand this. This is too much information, make it, or this is too simplified. And it really was like a 3 or 4 hour conversation. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I felt like I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. It could have been lying to me the whole time. I don't know exactly, but I felt like I had had a conversation with a subject matter expert mm-hmm. without bugging anybody
right.
and not being embarrassed either.
Because right.
I can ask it anything and I don't feel like silly or bad or
right.
like, can you say that a different way? I didn't
yes.
quite get it.
I love it that you said when you are able to kind of co-work or communicate with a large language model, it also takes that embarrassment of, oh, I'm asking stupid questions away. And you're able to kind of have a partner in the process of kind of clearing your thoughts, right? And defining what the problem is as well.
That's a great, yes, I love that about it.
That's amazing. And so moving on, sticking on this topic and talking more about the future, you are a bit advocate for women achieving their goals and dreams. What are some exciting advancements or trends in AI that you believe women should be actively involved in? Currently, it's more about, you know, working with it, right? But what's happening in the future?
So I think the future is unlimited when it comes to AI. And I think women should have a role at this early stage in shaping it so that we avoid bias, so that we solve the problems that 50% of the human population cares most about, or creates the advancements that that population cares about, just as we should with any other group. But I think women should be involved across the board. And when I think about what the future might hold, I read this really cool article recently. It was about crystals, all like different kinds of crystals that are used in industry, like silicon's a crystal, or what controls the clock in your phone is based on certain kinds of crystals. Well, it turns out, I didn't know this, but I learned a lot in this article, humans have found or created tens of thousands of different kinds of crystals, which is kind of cool. In the last, I don't know how long this research paper took, but I'm going to guess a year or two. AI hasn't been around that long. These researchers fed in all of the information about crystals and asked the AI to theorize what other versions there might be, what other crystal elements might be out there, materials might exist. And the machine came back with a couple hundred thousand new crystal versions. Uh-huh. And then they actually have a research lab where they're building these theoretical crystals and testing them for different properties, which then that could be the next super battery.
Right.
That you don't have to have damaging environmental materials like our batteries today, or the next superconductor or magnet that, you know, our cars can all float and there's no friction and it's much less gas.
It's like a new material now.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes, it's all
like
new.
It's like the crypto stone right now that you're, what is it called? The Superman's.
Kryptonite.
Kryptonite.
Yes, it's a new that kryptonite. We could find that one.
Wow.
Yes.
Actually, in Asian culture, a lot of people collect crystals. I don't know if you know that. They put it in their houses for feng shui.
Uh-huh.
And also, some people believe it gives energy. It clears the energy, or it amplifies the energy. So that might be something that can contribute to the paper as well.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes, we get a whole new variety for feng shui.
Yeah, so that's really amazing. And lastly, I would love to ask you, what role do you see women playing in the future of AI research, development, implementation? Like, what are some immediate roles that we can now put ourselves in, or just prepare ourselves?
Well, my big hope is that we really do have this shift in mentality that STEM has been a boy's job in the past, but this AI is not defined.
It's not defined yet.
It's not defined. And I'm not saying let's make it a girl's job.
But I mean, I don't mind. But
that's fantastic. But I have this hope, and I feel like there's a chance for it.
Right.
That women today think of STEM, or think of AI at least, as an entry to STEM that has a completely different roadmap and a completely different path to success than classic historic STEM. So today, my hope is that women are excited about AI and think of it as truly this tool. They can solve all kinds of STEM-related problems with their superpowers that they have today, with their expertise that they have today in problem solving and in communicating.
What they're naturally good at, right?
Yes.
To really just do what they do best and also contribute to the society as well.
Yes, yes, exactly. So that's my hope, is that women look at AI as this exciting, cool, barrier-less entry point to solving the world's problems.
Thank you so much, Deborah. 嗨，大家喜欢这集的内容吗？欢迎在 Apple Podcast、Spotify 或本集描述中最底下的连结帮我们评分留言，让我们知道你的想法。除了 Podcast 外 ，Caregon 策划了很多很棒的线下活动，每个月都有各式主题活动，从小型亲密的商业主题 Salon
到集结商业领袖的大型论坛，甚至是夏日论坛，以及是年末会员专属的 Gala 参会。透过这些活动，会员还能独家享受 Think Tank 内容以及邀请制的圆桌聚餐。更多详情请点击本集描述中成为 CareHub 会员了解。